The following is a presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com.
We interrupt this program to give you a bulletin just received from one of our naval units at sea. A large object traveling at supersonic speed is headed over the North Atlantic toward the east coast of the United States.
This earth of yours will be reduced to a burned-out cinder.
This could be the beginning of the end for the human race. Human beings cower before the onslaught of these unearthly enemies.
It is Wednesday, November 12th, 2014, and welcome to the Alien Invasion number 124, a presentation, a production of GalacticNetcasts.com. I'm Dave Nelson. Joining me, as always, all the way from Wausau, Wisconsin, the snow is there, and it's not here. It's Brad Ludwig and Anessa Moyens. How you guys doing?
Pretty good, Dave.
Good.
So, how are you enjoying the white stuff on the ground so far?
It is.
Like, who, me? No, I enjoy looking at it, but after snowblowing it, I'm like, eh.
And just think, it's only, what, November 12th?
Yeah. I think that's the other thing, too, is I was hoping it would wait till, like, the end of November, beginning of December to really kick in. But it snowed on Halloween, and then it snowed again a couple days ago and yesterday.
Surprise!
So, I know! Yeah, we've been getting all the snow. And we went to a parking lot last night for me to practice driving on semi-slick conditions.
Oh, I was going to say, you guys went to a parking lot to park? Were you guys parking?
No, we were
long enough to get out of the car and switch places
and make out brown chicken brown. Okay, sorry.
No, actually, we were working on her driving skills in icy conditions because she didn't get a whole lot of that in Texas, oddly enough.
Imagine that.
The key is to brake early and pump the brakes. Don't slam the brakes.
Yeah, he said to pump the brakes. And typically, I have a traction control system with ABS, and so I wouldn't have to pump the brakes. But at the moment, GM sucks, and I have to get a new electronic brake control module, and that's like $1,100. So.
Yeah, I could see why you want to hold off on that.
So I'm hoping in December I can get it fixed.
All right. Good luck. Let's dig into the show. This is the podcast where we talk about beings from elsewhere in the universe and their appearances in film, TV, video games, comic books, science, and in real life we're talking aliens, extraterrestrials, and the show is divided into three sections, the news, the craft corner, that's the spotlight of a certain kind of alien spacecraft, and our picks for the week. If you want to watch us live, we record the show once a week. For now, I guess. I don't know. Wednesdays, usually Wednesdays, sometimes Thursdays. Follow us on the social networks to find out when and where it's going to be. We are on Facebook, Google Plus, and Twitter. Or go to GalacticNetcasts.com/live or YouTube.com/GalacticNetcasts. So, without further ado, let's get into the show.
In the news.
And it looks like Brad has the very first story.
So I got this story from, surprise, from the BBC, actually. Not IO9. Breaking a tradition. And the story was, it spoke to me because I think we talked a little bit last week about are we alone in the universe and should we be used to that concept? You know, living out in the universe is a dangerous thing, and maybe we're the only ones here. Now, this kind of, on the opposite side of that coin, is talking about are we sending the right messages? You know, where, and this is the 40th anniversary, oddly enough, of Arecibo sending out the first messages into space. Thought that was kind of a cool little tidbit.
Oh, today's the anniversary?
Yes. Hang on. Where did I see that?
That would be a cool coincidence. Yes.
Yeah, shoot. Now I don't see it here. When we go into the story, it'll pop up. Anyways, let's start here. Artist Kerry Patterson has long dreamed of beaming messages far out into the emptiness of space, except her messages would have an extra dimension. Smell.
Ooh.
There's a nice opening sentence for you. By broadcasting formula of aromatic chemicals, she says, aliens could reconstruct all sorts of whiffs that help to define life on Earth. Animal blood and feces, sweet floral and citrus scents. I wouldn't want a poogram from outer space. I'm telling you that right now.
That sends the wrong message, I'm telling you.
It really does. Hey, here's what life is like on Earth. Boy, smell that.
It smells like poop.
It does. Sweet floral and citrus scents or benzene to show our global dependence on the car. This way, intelligent life forms on distant planets who may not see or hear as we do, says Patterson, could explore us through smell, one of the most primitive and ubiquitous senses of all. In recent years, astronomers, artists, linguists, and anthropologists have been converging on the idea that creating comprehensible messages for aliens is much harder than it seems. As a side note, and we're going to get into this in just a minute, when they were going to send out the Voyager probe, it has the golden disc on it, but the big question is, what messages do we put on it? How do we structure those messages in a way that aliens who have no idea, you know, do they see, do they hear, do they have all of the senses that we do? We don't know. And I think we had a story about this earlier in the year that, what was it? When they were constructing the containment center for nuclear waste, they were trying to plan for 10,000 years in the future. Now, this is just dealing with Earth people. Communication changes over time. And even if you try to read Old English, like from the time of Shakespeare, or even just a little bit earlier than that, the form and structure and sound of language changed dramatically, and that's just in 500 years.
Yeah, no, it's a very short time, that's for sure.
And now, if you're taking that on a whole nother, taking out just terrestrial forms of communication, there are some things that we can kind of count on with terrestrials, Earth people communicating, but now something completely alien and foreign to us, how would they communicate? We just don't know. So how do you create a message that is going to be somewhat universal? And that's why, you know, this everybody's kind of trying to look at, we've spent 40 years beaming stuff into space, but have we been beaming the right stuff? The right stuff. Anyways, we'll continue on with the story. In the 1800s, mathematician Carl Gauss proposed cutting down lines of trees in a densely forested area and replanting the strips with wheat or rye. And someone wrote in a book there that the contrasting colors would form a giant triangle and three squares known as Pythagoras' figure, which could be seen from the moon or even Mars. Of course, this is the 1800s where there was thought that there might be life on Mars. Not long after, an astronomer, Joseph von Littrow, proposed creating huge water-filled channels topped with kerosene. Igniting them at night showed geometric patterns such as triangles that Martians would interpret as a sign of intelligence, not nature. So, oh, here we go. The message sent by Arecibo hoped to make first contact on its 21,000-year journey to the edge of the Milky Way. The sketches it contained made from just 1,679 digital bits looks cute to us today, very much of the Pong video game generation. Just before then, NASA's Pioneer 10 and 11 space probes each carried a metal calling card bolted onto the frame with symbols and drawings on the plaque showing a naked man and woman. Now, this is kind of interesting here. Linear drawings of, and this is a quote, linear drawings of a male and female Homo sapiens are legible to contemporary humans. Excuse me. But the inceptors of Pioneer 10 could well assume we are made of, interceptors of Pioneer 10 could well assume we are made of several separate body parts, faces, hair, and the man's chest drawn as a separate closed shape. And our body surface is home for long worm-like beings. Now, what this is saying is basically on this drawing, the human body is broken down into its components visually. And each of the parts are labeled with a line, that an angular line that is drawn away from the body shape and is given a name. So what we're saying here is, depending on how somebody interprets a message, you know, you could view that in one light, that, you know, our body parts can be detachable, which could lead to all sorts of embarrassing situations if these aliens actually happen to come to Earth and they try to rip our arms off because they think they just come off.
Or embarrassing that, first contact.
Why is he trying to tear off my arm? But the concept of a line and a word, you know, is this a name of a creature that is somehow plugged into the side of, you know, the abdomen of a human? You know, trying to create a form of communication for something that is so alien from us is almost impossible.
Well, Brad, I was just thinking, you know, about the other possibilities. How could we make it easy for them? And I thought, you know, stick figures, you know, a basic circle and a vertical line and the arms and the legs, but then they would think that we're stick figures.
Yeah.
So there's no winning.
We're incredibly simple, unintelligent creatures that got lucky and flung something into space.
Yeah. Or, you know, or this too, you know, maybe they don't see in the same color spectrum as we do, so that it would mean nothing to them.
Oh, exactly. I saw an article not too long ago about humans with the rare condition of seeing more colors than we can see, than the normal human sees.
Yeah, I saw that, or I heard that too.
So, I mean, there's just variations in humans on planet Earth. To varying levels. So it's not outside of the realm of possibility of, you know, an alien race, if they have a different colored star than ours. I mean, to us, our sun gives off a certain wavelength of light that is a little bit more yellow. Now, if you get an alien that might have a slightly cooler sun or a slightly hotter sun, their eyes are going to be adapted to filter out a certain color range. So if they come here, everything's going to look yellowish to them, possibly.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe they're like gigantic, so their perspective on things is going to be different, or really smaller than we are. And
yeah.
Same thing goes for that.
Exactly. We're going to skip ahead a little bit here. Okay. Inevitably, such messages become outdated too, like time capsules. Consider the case of the Oglethorpe Atlanta Crypt of Civilization, a time capsule sealed on Earth in 1940, complete with a dry martini and a poster of Gone with the Wind. It was intended as a snapshot of 20th century life for future humans, not aliens, but like an intergalactic message, may only give a limited picture to future generations. When in 61,000 years, the time capsule would be opened, possibly, would Gone with the Wind have stood the test of time?
That's true.
Of tens of thousands of years.
Yeah.
Would it mean anything? Would language have so far changed over that period of time that it would be illegible? We these are things that we need to consider. Anthropologist John Traphagen of the University of Texas in Austin has been asking the same question, though his view is more cautious. When it comes to ET, you'll get a signal of some kind, not much information, and very long periods between hi, how are you, and whatever comes back. We may just shrug our shoulders and say, this is boring, and soon forget about it. If the time lag wasn't too long, we might use the minimal information we get from our slow speed conversation to invent what we think they're like and invent a kind of concept of what they're after.
You know what? This reminds me of Contact, when they first started getting those signals and they saw the video of Hitler, right? And then they found the keystone or the way that they could actually kind of figured out exactly what the aliens were trying to say.
Yep, because they were working in three dimensions and we were looking at it in two. God, I love that movie. It was so spectacular. Let's see. Consider how easy it is to mess up human-to-human communications. This interviewer got Trap Hagen's first name wrong when he emailed him for this article. An apology within minutes cleared up the confusion, yet if he had been an alien anthropologist on some sort of distant planet, it would have taken much longer to fix. He later confessed, "I could have thought this was a snooty English journalist and our conversation might never have happened." Even if Earth's interstellar messaging committees weeded out the typos, cultural gaffes are always a possibility. These can only be avoided by understanding the alien's culture, something that's not easy to do, especially when you've never met those you're communicating with. So it's not even so much when you get to the point where you can agree upon a message that you think is universal to send or is as universal as you think you can send, what kind of social aspects are there to that message?
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of interesting. Could you put something in like, "Hi, how are you?" and have that be percepted as, you know, giving a middle finger equivalent of an opening statement? We just don't know.
Or maybe they speak in metaphor, like that episode of Star Trek The Next Generation.
I knew it was coming.
Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra and the walls fell. What does that mean?
You know, another thing, too, that this points out is we live for, on average, I think we live about 78 years. That's the average lifespan of a human being. What if an alien culture, an alien species, lives 2 to 3 times longer than that? Are they going to not have the sense of urgency to return a message?
Yeah.
Because they have time? You know, it might be generations before we would get a reply, even if they got it, and they tried to figure out through their own committee how to reply back to our message in a way that would be perceived. So we have a time element that's there too, because we don't know how long these alien beings live because we've never met them. Yet ultimately what matters is that they stop and consider the beings who sent the message, the people who wanted to say, "Here are some important things. Here's our DNA. Here is some maths and universal physics. And here's our longing and desire to say, I'm like you, but I'm different." So there's a lot that we want to communicate, but we only have – there are limitations to how it can be done, what's the best way to do it, social aspects and time. So there's a lot of different things that we need to consider. And if we even do get a reply, how lucky would that be, like winning the lottery for us?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of things to consider when it comes to communicating with beings we've never met.
Couple of thoughts from the story. Earlier on, you were talking about people trying to make a message that the aliens could see from the sky. What about those images in what, South America, is it? The ones that you can only see from the sky?
Nazca lines? Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe that was early man's attempt at trying to communicate with aliens or who they thought were gods at the time.
Yeah, maybe. And actually, did you see that some more lines had been uncovered in other areas?
Yeah.
Due to major windstorms? I thought that was really fascinating.
Yeah. So maybe it was quite the common thing back in the day, you know, trying to reach out to
communicate with gods or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was also thinking, too, during when you were talking about the story was, you know, maybe these aliens, whoever they are, maybe trying to communicate with us, and we don't know what they're talking. You know, we can't hear their signals, or they're sending a message to us, but we can't figure it out because we don't, you know, we can't understand from their point of view.
Our ability to understand the electromagnetic spectrum, and even if they're using that to communicate, you know, maybe they're sending us messages below the ultraviolet range or above, you know, we don't know the technology that they currently have, and if we aren't matching that, if they're sending out messages, you know, perhaps our planet is being constantly bombarded by messages from alien races, but we haven't created the technology to actually or hit upon the technology that they're using to communicate with us. We don't know.
That's going to be the cause of the invasion. These pissed off aliens who keep on trying to message us, and they're like, these stupid humans, can't they understand us?
We kept sending you messages, and you just weren't responding. So we figured you guys are just jerks. So whatever.
All right. Before we move on, Anessa, your thoughts on this? What do you think we should say to the aliens that would be a quick, easy, understandable message?
Yeah, it's really hard to say what would be a quick, understandable message if we don't know what they understand or what they can read or hear or smell. Because you might, you know, say, hi, smiley face, and they're like, ah, that's our symbol for death or something. Yeah. So you just never know. So, you know, like this intergalactic war gets started because you're being friendly. It's like, hi, emoticon smiley.
That's like a funny comedy, you know?
So, I mean, like, I think maybe images of scenery or something would be kind of nice, because surely, you know, they've got hills or some kind of landscape on their planet. And so maybe if you send them pictures of mountains and rivers and valleys and stuff, like, they'll be like, oh, hey, like this Earth place. And then maybe like a couple of cities or skylines, so they can see that it's a diverse planet with its cities and nature and whatnot.
And that's, you know, that's definitely something that I think a lot of different life forms could relate to. And I think we'd also have to, or want to, send a variety of geographical locations, you know, because maybe their planet's more like the North Pole, or
maybe it's more like the Sahara. I mean, you really don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think if you send like a variety of images of geographic locations, and maybe send them in different color schemes and stuff to try to help. I don't know how it would be possible. Like, you could send it like on X-ray film or something, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Because you never really know how they can, if they can see. That's the other thing, too. So, yeah, I think the safe way, if they were to see anything, you know, send them images. Because you never know how things are going to translate, if they translate at all. I mean, we might have a letter that might look like something that is forbidden on that planet, or threatening, or what have you. So,
okay, I think we got this solved.
Pictures.
Yeah, pictures.
Geographic locations.
All right.
Done.
All right. Thank you, Brad. Great story. Great discussion. How about this? More people believe in space aliens than God in the UK, according to a new survey. Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw that story and I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it just seems like a lot of people are losing their faith too. So I think.
Yeah, that could be one of the reasons. That's the next logical thing, is to believe in aliens instead of God. So more than 33 million UK citizens believe in extraterrestrial life, compared to just over 27 million who believe in God. Now, we should clarify, later on in the story, they talk about, they talk to a few people about this survey, pretty well-known people, and one of them points out the fact, oh, it's Nick Pope. We've talked about him before. He is the former UK Ministry of Defense UFO investigator.
And
he said that it's important to bear in mind that people who believe in alien life don't necessarily think it's visiting us, more like extraterrestrial life on another planet that maybe is at the same level or below our level, that can't communicate or can't go into the galaxy and search us and seek us out. So that's a very important point. It's not all like aliens in UFOs or flying saucers, you know, landing and abducting people. That's a big difference. So this was a survey, an online survey of 1,359 people, adults, and they were asked a variety of questions ranging from whether or not men actually landed on the moon. The survey conducted by Opinion Matters revealed the following statistics among those surveyed. 52% believe UFO evidence has been covered up because widespread knowledge of their existence would threaten government stability. 44% believe in God. Only 1 in 10 people has reported seeing a UFO, which seems pretty high when you think about it. One in 10 people, right?
Yeah.
A quarter more men than women claim to have seen UFOs. That's not surprising. 20% of the respondents believe UFOs have landed on Earth. Now, while the survey was conducted as part of a tie-in to the new video game XCOM Enemy Unknown, it was a legitimate sampling of opinions that can be taken to represent the population of the UK, according to the agency who conducted the survey. So it was a neat promotion. I liked how they tied it in, but I could see how the legitimacy was threatened because it was part of a promotion. Like, hey, XCOM Enemy Unknown is about aliens, so let's do a survey about aliens.
Yeah.
You know? So Alistair McDonald Ratcliffe. That's a totally British name.
That's a mouthful.
he's an Anglican. Is it Anglican or Anglican? Can't.
Anglican.
Anglican.
Not Anglicant.
Anglican.
They're more of a glass half full society.
Exactly. So he's a priest and director of General of the World Dialogue Council, believes that people are less inclined to be participants in traditional churches, which might represent a shift of general beliefs that they have about God and extraterrestrials. There may be some correlation there, he noted, but I have to say the actual hard data has yet to be found. There may be a relationship between people becoming more credulous in UFOs and less credulous in traditional religion. Now, somebody please define credulous for me. I have no idea what that means. Anessa, you seem smart.
The word was credulous.
Credulous. So
you're eager to believe in something.
Oh, okay. Okay, I didn't know that. Great to know. All right.
You're an easy mark or sucker.
Yeah, you're gullible.
Okay. The recent upsurge in the discovery of extrasolar planets may be a factor here as well. As we close in on shadow Earths, people are more likely to think that if Earth isn't unique, neither is life, he added. And that is Nick Pope saying that. Pope also noted that many of the doubts people have might have about religion or about extraterrestrial life are rooted in a similar problem, lack of hard evidence. So it might be just as easy to believe in extraterrestrial life as it is in God, because there is really no hard evidence either way, right? So it's it's pretty much up in the air as far as God or aliens.
Well, the other thing too is, people can be like, oh, you know, it's a miracle that this happened or whatever. But at the same time, there's just so many people that have seen unidentified flying objects or have taken images or whatever, that, you know, I can see how they'd be like, oh, they totally exist, because mm-hmm. I've seen pictures, I've seen a video. Whereas you don't typically see a video of a miracle happening, you know?
Good point.
There's
this,
you know, fatal crash, and the only thing that's left of this car is a frame and this person walking away, but you don't actually see it in action. And so it's like, yeah, whatever, it didn't happen.
So if God does exist, if you're out there, God, you need some new PR. You need to, you need a hook of some kind. You need to, like, because the aliens, they got spacecraft, right? They got UFOs. So maybe like a golden chariot, or a chariot on fire.
A chariot on fire. Anybody can do a chariot on fire. Then you're going to get the skeptics or something.
Yeah, that's true.
So I also kind of think that if he needs a PR person, he needs whoever's, you know, helping out the Pope.
Hey, there you go.
The Pope's been on a roll lately.
Yeah. Coolest Pope ever, by the way. All right. All right. There you go. That's my story. So how do you guys feel? Not you, not Brad and Nessa, but our listeners. How would you answer this survey? We would love to know. Leave us some feedback. Our voice mail number is 805-328-3966. I finally got that sucker memorized after 3 years. 805-328-3966 or Gmail. We are at galacticnetcasts@gmail.com, so drop us an email. galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. Tell us how you would respond to that survey that those Brits took. All right, wrapping up the news section, Anessa, what do you got for us?
Well, speaking of UFOs and whether or not people believe in them, I came across this story today that talks about a video of a UFO abducting a car in Cavalier, North Dakota.
A car?
A car.
Huh.
The video, if I remember, is like a minute and a half long, maybe? If that. It's a short video, maybe about a minute, minute and a half. And it was uploaded on November 7th by the, quote, Paranormal Frequency, that's the user on YouTube. And it shows a car driving down a quiet street in the middle of the night when all of a sudden a flash of light is seen and the car vanishes from sight. Yeah, it's kind of interesting to watch. And the way the car or the video is positioned, it looks like maybe a city camera. Not necessarily a security cam, but you know how they have traffic cams and
yeah,
whatnot.
Yeah, CTV. Or not CTV,
and so you've
but...
got like this... Sorry, what?
Closed-circuit TV.
Kind of.
Yeah.
It's not black and white. It's in color. Hmm. More of a traffic cam.
Okay.
But yeah, so you've got like this main street, and it kind of tees off. There's a building at the end, and then people go around the block, and you have this car coming towards the camera, and it happens probably about 45 seconds or so into the video, because I'm like, what's happening? There's nothing going on. There's nobody driving. And then, yeah, you see like this flash of light and the car is gone. But there are a lot of people who question the authenticity of the photo or the video and believe that there are many red flags indicating that it's a hoax. And so the article that I came across on openminds.tv talks about some of the red flags in the video, beginning with the title, with the words UFO and OVNI. I'm not exactly sure what OVNI stands for, but it's the UFO equivalent in other parts of the world, suggests that the person who posted the video intended for the title to be sensational and wanted to attract attention. Hmm. After all, there is no UFO/OVNI depicted in this video. Next, the poster added several keywords to the video's description, including UFO, UFOs, UFO sightings, and UFO filmed, just to name a few. Again, the purpose is likely to attract people to watch the video. The account that was used to upload the video was created the same day that it was uploaded, and it only has one other video. So I was trying to see other...
Oh, okay. I'm not seeing what language it is, but basically it's a foreign abbreviation for UFO. It's
object visible something maybe.
Object not visible or object not identifiable.
Oh, okay.
That makes sense.
That would make sense.
Hmm.
But yeah.
Oh, okay. Like from Italian. I'm sorry. Oggetto volante non identificato.
So object not identified.
Yeah. OVNI. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, and the flash of light. Just watching the video. If you ignore the keywords and attempt to sensationalize the video, it does seem kind of artificial with the bright light and the disappearance.
Yeah. That I could have done that, I got my degree in visual communications, which is a specialty in television. I could have put that video together for you in no time at all.
Okay,
yeah,
I was going to say, does this remind you guys of that story that we had a long time ago about I think it was in China somewhere. Somebody,
the motorcyclist.
Yeah, the motorcyclist. Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of does, and. You know, someone went on to say that it can be recreated with video editing software really easily. Just give them a couple minutes and boom. So, yeah, looking at the video, I would say it's a hoax. But I would recommend that people go to openminds.tv and check out the article and the video for themselves and see what they think.
And have open mind. Have an open mind about it, people.
Have an open mind. But, yeah, I'm... I'm saying hoax I didn't major in anything like that, but I did take a class that introduced us to video editing and Adobe Premiere and whatnot, and yeah, you could totally do that.
It would not be hard to do, especially, was that at night when not a lot of traffic?
Yeah, at night. Not a lot of cars. Like the first maybe 20 seconds is like no movement, and then you see a car drive by, and then like another few seconds, and then you see a couple of cars drive by. One turns the corner, and the second car is the one that heads straight and ends up vanishing in a flash of light. So the other thing that I would say is probably looking at the news in Cavalier, North Dakota, to see if there's any weird reports or sightings and stuff.
Yeah, they're probably going.
From the person that was like, oh man, I don't know how I got here. Like, call at 4 a.m. Person stuck on the side of the road, doesn't know how they got there.
Well, they probably got the story too off this, or they're probably hearing about it like how we're hearing about it. And they're going.
Well, no, I'm saying like if they actually, you know, say I'm driving the Cavalier and I'm going down Main Street and then suddenly I'm like a couple miles away, stopped, and I don't know how I got there. Like, you might inform law enforcement, and there might be, like, a little police blotter thing.
Or it was
you never know.
Or it was an empty car, too.
Driving down the street.
Oh, it was driving. I thought it was parked. Okay, never mind.
No, it was driving down the street. It, like, turns the corner, and it's, like, heading towards the camera, and then, boom, it's gone. So that would be also kind of weird, too, though. Like, it reappears, but there's nobody in the car.
Well, you know, it's Cavalier, North Dakota. Maybe they don't care. They're very cavalier about it.
Wah, wah.
Yeah. All right. So. Excellent stuff. Good job, Anessa. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Let's move on to this right here.
Please identify the craft you witnessed.
A black triangular three-dimensional shape, too. It's just flying, hovering in it.
Shaped like almost like between an egg and like a teardrop.
Two long cylinder objects flying over me.
We had a zone. I could see the occupants in it.
It appeared to be rotating, and it was circular to disc shape, and it hovered for maybe about 5 minutes.
That, my friends, could only mean one thing. It's time for Craft Corner, our spotlight of a certain kind of alien spacecraft in history. And I think we're starting to hit the bottom of the barrel when it comes to traditional UFO sightings, different crafts that people have supposedly seen. And the reason I say this is now we're actually dealing with a craft that is not one, but two crafts. A craft that splits into two. It's called a split craft.
Surprise!
Yeah.
Two for the price of one.
And next week, we're going to talk about the craft that splits into three.
The threefer.
Yeah.
That sounds like something you'd find from a hippie friend of yours, some threefer.
Yeah. Three for Thursday. It's two for Tuesday and three for Thursday. All right.
And now we've become a rock radio station.
Yeah, exactly. So this is exactly what it sounds like, a UFO that splits into two separate parts. Sometimes it is in two equal parts. At other times, it is a smaller craft that splits off. As to why alien entities would use this method, one can only speculate, but it seems reasonable to suggest when a smaller craft splits off, it could be used for scouting. Or, you know, Star Trek comes to mind. Because on the premiere episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, they demonstrated how the bridge came off, the saucer section came off the rest of the ship. So in battle, it could separate, and each part is separate. Like, they could take, like, the civilians or the non-essential personnel, and they can go off to safety while the other part of the ship fights the enemy. So maybe it's that kind of deal. Who knows?
Yep.
Or that episode from Star Trek Voyager where it was like it was a starship, but it went into several pieces, and it like it could fight like numerous targets. It was not just two; it was like several pieces of the ship. Anyways,
well, even the Enterprise could break in into different crafts. So
yeah, that's what I just said, Brad. Top.
Oh, the Enterprise. Oh, I thought you said Voyager.
No, sorry. The first thing I said was the Enterprise.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah. No, it's okay. I understand. So according to one report, two were jet black and one looked like a 10-gallon hat. And the other looked like a football helmet. A lot of hats and headwear going on here. They were side by side, and the one looked like the football helmet had smoke coming out the back. And these are all eyewitness reports, by the way. Another eyewitness from a 1968 sighting described it as spherical and bright red. It also seemed to have a glow about it. It was not pregnant. After watching this object for approximately 15 to 20 seconds, it suddenly split into two separate objects. Both objects took off at a very high rate of speed. And a third incident described a large sphere, I love that word, sphere, floating in two halves, then moving together before moving away. The sphere was divided into two parts vertically. The sphere was as bright as a polished chrome, looked a bit like a giant ball bearing, approximately 35 meters across. So there you go. Another one to think about, a split craft on your craft corner here on the Alien Invasion. So any thoughts about this, how it could be used or anything? Your thoughts, panel?
Well, from a tactical standpoint, if you can surround your enemy, having two ships that are, you know, equally as agile and strong, that would be, you know, to be able to attack at the front and rear of something would be pretty kick-ass.
Or, like the story said earlier, maybe one was a scout craft, you know, scout ahead, yeah. You know, or go off and investigate while the main part continues on its course or whatever.
Word.
Vanessa, thoughts?
Yeah, I don't know. It's an airplane. I don't know. That was kind of like my first thought, because you know how depending on the angle that you're looking at an airplane and the way that it's flying, and it looks like one dot, and then it like turns slightly, and then you see like the lights on both wings. I'm like,
no, that's what looking at. That's a very good point. Yeah, I could totally. I've mistaken that before myself. Or yeah. At night sometimes too, you'll see two lights in the sky, right?
Yeah.
And then you think is one, and then it spits off into two.
Yep.
At least I've seen.
So I'm
that.
Just kind of wondering if maybe it could be an airplane that, you know, is changing its course, or if you're near an airport, it could in fact be two airplanes coming in.
Okay.
So I'm circling around, and they just happen to line up, even though they're, you know, a different distance from each other. And then as one starts to make its way around more, then you're like, oh, it split into two. It's totally a split craft. And I just kind of burst people's bubbles with that. I'm sorry.
As long as it was not a spliff craft, we're good to go.
Yeah. There we go.
The red flag for me is the different descriptions, because each description is different. Now, if it was the same description of the objects on all three occasions, and all three occasions that same description split off into two, then it's something that I would start believing in. But one, they said it looked like a football helmet. The other was like a polished chrome sphere. The other one kind of glowed. So, you know, make up your minds.
The helmet and the sphere would be similar, kind of.
Say again?
They are kind of rounded. It just might be distortion from the atmosphere or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Might be something off a cloud, maybe. I don't know.
Fair enough. All right. So who knows? Till I actually see one, I'm not going to believe it either. So.
Word.
All right. Let's move on to our picks. These are things that we have watched, listened to, read, played, whatever, this week. Something that we took into our senses and we want to give to you. Show off to your senses. Brad, you're up first. What's your pick?
Well, I happened to jump onto Hulu to, you know, I kind of felt like I'd been going on Netflix a lot for my content. So I decided to hit Hulu. Well, that's right. My last pick was My Favorite Martian.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that thought process was really kind of screwy. Anyways, so I decided to do something different. Instead of picking a movie or a show, I actually went with a documentary
And the documentary I found was from UFO TV, and it's called Touched, and it's from 2008.
Oh, you know what? Hulu has a bunch of UFO and alien content.
Yeah, they do. So if you're into or interested in, I know I saw like two parts to a movie. It was like really long and they broke it up into two parts. I can't remember the name of the film, but yeah, there's a number of things on there. And Touched, I'm not normally a documentary kind of a person. I mean, unless the topic is something that is so interesting to me, even if I'm lukewarm about it, I won't watch it. It needs to be something that I really, really care about, because sometimes documentaries can be incredibly verbose and they drag.
And, you know,
that's my opinion.
And on a lot of these UFO documentaries, they cover a lot of the same subjects and they have a lot of the same people on.
Yeah. So my interest in them is usually not that great. But this kind of attracted me because the documentary was about a single female named Karen, a married couple, Jamie and Peter, and a psychiatrist, John Mack, who worked with of the married couple, Peter was the abductee. And this John Mack had worked with both Karen and Peter, and it was a very interesting story of not so much about what happened with the abduction, but what happens to your life during and after. So these people aren't people who were abducted just once. They were abducted multiple times, or at least that was their perception, depending on what your beliefs are. Okay. So Jamie and Peter, and this happened when Peter was in his 20s and not too long after they were married. And his first experience really totally freaked him out. And he ended up having to, you know, trying to hold a marriage together when one person is experiencing something that is very traumatic that the other person in the relationship is not experiencing at all and may or may not question their partner's sanity, or may not question their dedication to this major curveball in the relationship. I mean, those are kind of big questions that any couple, be it a married couple or people that are just dating or even friends for that matter. Major changes like that can cause an amount of stress that makes you kind of question that relationship. And so some of the documentary was about the two of them and how his seeing Dr. Mack and trying to work through all of this and them working to keep their marriage together. Now the other person, Karen, is single and
sorry, that was me.
I need to learn to turn off my speaker. There we go. She is single, and her experience started when she was a kid and continued on through her life, and at a certain point she met she had an experience with these alien creatures, and it was communicated to her that they were hers, that these were hybrid children that came from her.
Whoa.
And in the discussion, and this documentary is very frank and very, it asks a lot of probing questions, and there's a lot of crying in this. So no matter what your thoughts are, the third focus of this is this psychiatrist, and he is a part of Harvard. He is a Harvard professor, and the attention that his study and the books that he put out based on these experiences were not positive in a lot of cases. You know,
people thought that he was crazy and he was in jeopardy of losing his position at Harvard. And so it's a discussion about the things that he went through, not just in the treatment of two of these people, Peter and Karin, but in trying to keep his job, in working on, you know, writing and promoting these books that, you know, people wonder if he's insane. People wonder if maybe he's gotten sucked into something and believes something that he was not objective about, that he stopped being detached and became a part of this maybe psychosis that these people that he's treating are all sort of in on at a certain level. So it covers a lot of territory, and it's an hour and 6 minutes, so it's not very long, but it's very interesting, and they do talk about – you can't avoid talking about their abduction experiences, and it is mentioned in there, but the discussion of what happens after and during, and there's even recordings of some of the sessions that Dr. Mack had with Peter. I remember that quite specifically. And there's a lot of swearing and a lot of crying and all sorts of stuff. So it's very visceral. It's very, very emotionally charged. And like I said, no matter if you believe that aliens are real or if you believe that people that are experiencing abductions have suffered maybe some kind of trauma and this is their brain sort of trying to deal with it but in an offhand way and they've constructed this whole scenario of being abducted, no matter what you believe, I think you kind of get a good view of it's real to them and the doctor that treated them, how he tried to be as objective as he could and tried to help work them through these things that they felt were very real to them. So I highly recommend it. And get ready for some really emotionally raw stuff. It's very, very raw.
Well, it's got to be really, really frustrating for those people. Either, you know, even if it didn't happen, for them, it's like you said, it's real. So to go through something like that and try to make your friends and family believe that you actually did go through something like that and them not believing it, or it affecting your life in some weird way, in some bad way, that's got to be hard to deal with. So I could understand the emotion and the tears and all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, it's on Hulu. We'll have the link in the show notes for you to click over and give it a watch. And they do have a number of other UFO TV productions on Hulu as well. So if you dug that, you can check out some of their other material that they produced.
You know, Hulu also has a lot of web-only stuff, too. It's not just, like, over-the-air TV that's also online. There's some specific things either made specifically for Hulu or stuff that they scrape offline and put it onto Hulu.
Yeah, two of my some of my favorite shows that I like to watch are Hulu exclusives, Quick Draw and The Awesomes, which is an animated superhero show. So anyways, cool. Hulu,
right.
Pretty cool. Check it out.
Awesome. Thank you, Brad. Yep. Who's next in the lineup?
Anessa.
Anessa, what's your pick?
Actually, I downloaded this earlier this week. Or over the weekend, I don't remember. I downloaded a game on the iPad that is called Zombie Catchers. And if you think about Soylent Green, and, you know, Soylent Green is people, in this case, it would be a zombie. I forget the name of the juice. But anyway, that juice is zombies. And you're essentially this playing the part of a little alien dude, and he's got a robot buddy, and I don't remember whose name is who, but you've got AJ and Bud, and they're two intergalactic businessmen, and they've decided to set up shop on Earth. And basically they go around and you have to go and catch zombies, and then you juice them and sell the juice to people, and people line up for the juice, and as they buy more juice, then you get to upgrade your equipment. allowing you to catch more zombies. After the first few levels, you end up coming across zombies that somehow might have gotten a hold of a weapon, and they just kind of like randomly swing it at you, so there are hazards and whatnot in the game. But it's a cute little game. It's a free download on iTunes. I looked. I didn't find it on Google Play. There is another game there called Zombie Catcher, but it's not the same thing. This one's by Two Men and a Dog is the name of the people that put it out.
Oh, names. Names are fun.
Yeah, they are. But yeah, initially I just saw Zombie Catchers and I'm like, I'm going to download this. And then suddenly there's like UFOs in it. And I'm like, I'm going to use that as a pick. I downloaded it for zombies and I ended up with aliens.
It was your pick without even realizing, or with, it was an accidental pick, sort of.
Pretty much. I didn't actually actively go looking for a UFO game. I was just like, oh, let me see what's in the app store. Zombie Catchers, that sounds mildly entertaining. Click. And yeah, you end up with, you've got like this little gun that shoots like a spear. And as you're playing, it's kind of like a side-scroller type thing. But the levels, you know, you end up so far, and then you go back to the shop and juice, and then you show, like, this line of cars of people buying zombie juice that they don't really realize that it's zombie juice, I'm sure.
Suckers.
Suckers! But yeah, like, you go around, you've got this gun that shoots out, like, a little spear, and you're in this swampy area, and you have to set out brains to kind of lure the zombies out of the swamp. And as they come out, you have to hide. Because if they see you, then they're going to run away. And then you have to run after them, shooting a spear at them from your spear gun. So, yeah.
All right. Sounds like fun.
Yeah, it's a cute game. It's free. I know that they have in-app purchases, but I don't usually do in-app purchases. So
it's usually pretty optional.
Yeah, usually pretty optional.
All right. Well, thank you, Anessa. That was awesome. So I did have a pick, but we're running a little bit late, so I'm going to save mine for next week.
What?
I know. This has never been done before. Well, I don't want to be rushed. I hate rushing because then it seems like I don't get the point across. So I'm going to save mine until next week. But as a tease, it's good, and it's about aliens.
What?
It's about aliens?
Yeah, what are the chances of that happening on the Alien Invasion podcast?
That, like, never happens.
Yeah. So look for that next week, and look for more stuff, stories, picks, and, of course, the Craft Corner next week on another edition of the Alien Invasion. Don't forget, you can subscribe to us in a number of different places, including iTunes. And if you do it through iTunes, please, if you like us, leave us a review and 5 stars. That helps us get more subscribers. We're also on Stitcher, and you can find us on TuneIn as well. Just search for either the Alien Invasion or Galactic Netcasts. You'll find us either way. Our website is galacticnetcasts.com, and you can follow us. I already said Twitter, Google Plus, and Facebook, right?
Yep.
Okay. Feedback.
Yes, but you forgot to repeat the picks.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. Okay. Go back here real quick.
You can finish the feedback and then be like, oh yeah, and our picks are.
Okay. Feedback. Our number is 805-328-3966. Leave a voicemail or leave us a text message on that number. Also, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com is the email address. All right. So the picks were Zombie Catchers, an iOS game that Anessa had, and UFO TV Presents Touched on Hulu, and we'll have the links in the show notes as well. All right, that's going to do it for this Alien Invasion from galacticnetcast.com. Final thoughts, Brad, you go first.
I go first? I'm not sure. I got nothing right now.
You know what?
Surprise!
Every week, you know it's coming, right? You know that the final thought is coming.
Huh.
It's okay. It's almost funnier that you don't have one, because it's
sorta
a thing. It's a thing.
Or sad, depending on your point of view.
Yeah. You can't have a final thought every week. Maybe you used up all your thoughts, so you don't have a final one anymore.
Boy, that's sad. I'm only 44. It just goes downhill from here.
All right. So I know Anessa's got she's got to have something. Anessa, what's your final thought?
The Vanga bus is coming.
In my pants.
You'll have to explain that. I don't know what you're talking about.
So it's a song. It was in the it ended up making an appearance in the Six Flags commercials. The Vanga bus is coming. And it happened to be my class song back in the day. And it popped in my head today. There was something that was said that triggered that song being stuck in my head. But
yeah. Isn't that weird how that happens? Just one little trigger can just set off a song in your head for hours.
Yeah, I don't remember what was said, but then suddenly I'm like, the Vanga bus is coming, and everybody's jumping, New York to San Francisco, and intercity disco.
I think so, we got a show title. That's a show title right there. All right, on that note, let's get out of here. Thanks for joining us. And that's it for the Alien Invasion. We'll talk to you guys next week.
All right.
Sounds
Bye.
Good.
Bye.
You have been listening to a presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com. For more about the show you just listened to, including how to subscribe, give us feedback, links to our social feeds, and more, please visit www.galacticnetcasts.com.